When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carriad Lloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
the Weirdos Book Club.
Join us!
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carriad's Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you.
This week's book guest is Love, Nina by Nina Stibbe.
What's it about? Love, Nina is a series of letters Nina Stibbe wrote to her sister Vic whilst working as a nanny for two boys in London.
What qualifies it for the Weirdos Book Club? Well, Nina is very much an outsider in the North London world, and she's often shoeless.
In this episode, we discuss Thomas Hardy.
Actors.
Family.
Alan Bennett.
Cooking.
Camden.
The London Review of Books.
And horses. And joining us this week is Rachel Paris. Rachel is an award-winning comedian, writer and improviser, as well as being a member of Ostentatious, the improvised Jane Austen novel. I've heard they're very good. She's also the host of The Mash Report, is a regular guest on I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue on Radio 4, and has been seen on Live at the Apollo, Would I Lie to You, QI and Mock the Week.
Trigger warning, this episode is very middle class.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us, Rachel Paris.
I'm very happy to be here. We could just chat, couldn't we?
I know. We're having to force ourselves to actually do the thing that we're supposed to do.
This is a very chatty book.
It is a very chatty book.
There are some books where I think, if we went off on a tangent, and then we must go back to the original text.
Yes.
But with this one, I think it's all right.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
I think it's okay to be chatty.
In a way, it's about tangents.
Yes.
It's her going off on tangents.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we are talking about Love, Nina by Nina Stibbe, which was written in 1982. Great year, everybody. Great year.
Yeah, Carriad was born.
People were born that year. Not the time. I'm 25, obviously.
Because some of us are still like that. I think that's when John Lennon was killed. So maybe a really tough year, actually, for music and stuff.
In the books, in history books, it's always when the Falklands happened. So that's when you're like, what happened the year you were born? Falklands.
Well, you guys have good knowledge of 1982.
What happened?
When were
you
born? You weren't born yet.
84.
Yeah.
Anything for 84?
Kylie Minogue? No, I just share a birthday with Kylie Minogue. She wasn't born in 1984, but she looks like she was.
So you're a Gemini as well?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I was going to say that as I was thinking that. I thought, does Sarah know she's a Gemini? We had some Gemini chat the other day on Monica Heisey's episode.
Monica Heisey describes Geminis in her book as the psychopaths of the zodiac.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
and Carriad was all like, did you not know? Did you not know that everyone thinks that about Geminis? Oh, did you not know?
I have seen quite a lot of negative stuff about Geminis, to be fair.
Yeah, okay, well, I've blanked it out.
Which is such a Gemini trait. I don't know if Nina Stibbe is a Gemini, actually. That wasn't clear.
When we mentioned in our very first episode, it was Pumpkin Eater, we talked about the star sign.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I had a couple of people say to me, yeah, we do want to know the star signs of all the authors.
Wow. Okay, I will look it up in a minute. Yeah. So this is an unusual pick for a book because it's not a novel.
It is Carriad picked it.
All right, Mrs. Literature. You're not tarred with the brush.
No, it's not about tarred with a brush. I just wanted people to know.
I want them to know you're
really,
a Gemini.
You really like this book.
I do like this book.
Yeah. When did it come to you in your life?
Somebody recommended her fiction to me as being very funny. And I think I was on a late night Kindle browse. And then when I saw this one, This is the first book that was published, which, as I said, is a series of letters, real letters that she wrote to her sister. So I was like, oh, I'll just start there. And I just fell in love with the writing and how funny it was and the world. It is, as we said, real letters to her sister, talking about living in this mad North London, which is where I grew up, literary madness, really. Like, Alan Bennett is their neighbour, comes around all the time. Jonathan Miller lives down around the corner.
Yeah, I don't know Jonathan Miller.
Well, you're in Nina Stibbe's club, because neither does she. And she's this 20-year-old who turns up from Leicester and is just dropped into the middle of, like, basically sort of the lit, I guess, like, joining the Bloomsbury group at the time when everyone's hanging out. It's like everybody is hanging out at that point. But she doesn't know who anyone is, and she writes very funny, confused, naive letters back to her sister. And it just made me laugh out loud. I'm getting the feeling it didn't make you laugh out loud, Sarah Pascoe. That's what I'm getting the feeling.
It made me laugh out loud.
Thank you, Rachel Paris.
Well, I thought it was so funny.
So funny.
Her little conversations. They must be what actually happened. Or,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Or they're not quite what actually happened, but she's just done a fantastic job of doing a slightly funnier version of what happened. But they're so funny.
I did wonder if it's the... I kept thinking, this is the kind of thing that would have got a big laugh around the dinner table. And then she goes, okay, that's it.
Yeah.
And verbatim popped it in a letter to her sister.
Yeah.
The bit that gets a big laugh, especially when she's been very funny in real life.
Yeah. But it's not always, it's everyone's funny. She makes everyone
funny.
Quite, it's the funny little things that you say. I wrote down all my favourite funny bits. There was a conversation between, so she looks after two young boys.
Sam and Will.
She's like a nanny to them, isn't she? And the things that they come out with, their like view on life, often the way that she captures it in her letters is so funny. I remember a bit where he's trying to calculate, using one of those old-fashioned things we used to do in the 80s, how long it'll be until she has children. And he goes,
yeah,
I've done the maths, it's going to be 3 years. And she goes, that's far too soon.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And he goes, 5 years then. And she goes, no. And he goes, fine, 7 years, but it's twins.
So they are so funny. And she captures, for letters, which are just letters to your sister, which you'd expect to be dull, you know, or not very fascinating to the world, she captures that world that she's in. And we should say, she's looking after Sam and Will. Sam and Will's mum is Mary Kay Wilmers, who created the London Review of Books. And Sam and Will's dad is the director, Stephen Frears.
But the letters don't go into that.
No, they don't. But again, I guess it explains why everyone is very funny and interesting and literary. Like, the people she is around at that time are certainly not like, oh, he's an accountant and she's a GP. It's
yes,
like they are very literary, funny people.
That's yes, true, yeah.
Mary Kay Wilmers was best friends with Alan Bennett from university, so that's why he...
Oh, really?
Yes.
Because it just felt like... This is not a world I know.
Yep.
I didn't grow up in North London.
I mean, I should say, I didn't grow up in literary North London. I grew up very much in suburban North London with normal people.
But so I didn't know who these people were.
Yeah.
And had to Google them afterwards.
I didn't know who the mum was. Yeah, I had to Google everybody apart from Alan Bennett, basically.
But
yeah,
so the character of Alan Bennett... I just felt like this guy down the road is quite... Because obviously Alan Bennett in my head is an old man, but at the time he was probably younger.
But I think he's always been that age.
Yeah.
Always been an old man, yeah.
And so it feels a bit like just sort of Meals on Wheels, or he's allowed to pop in and have some supper, which he's always complaining about.
Yeah.
But he's allowed to come in and eat.
Yeah, but I think that's what I love about this book, is she captures the way that... people are in your life who moan about things like family, extended family or chosen family.
Mm.
And that Alan lives two doors down, but he's there all the time moaning about it. And then there's a point in the book where Nina moves out and she is then constantly trying to come around to number 55 as well to hang out with him. And you just get the sense that this is a very lovely family to be with.
Mm.
Like, she describes just all watching, like, the boys love watching football. And even though she doesn't like football and the mum doesn't like football and Alan Bennett doesn't like football, they all watch football and shout at the screen together. And you just get this sense of, like, people who like being near each other.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I didn't know who Mary Kay Wilmers was. I had to Google that afterwards and discovered that she is from an incredibly mad, rich, wealthy background, created the London Review of Books, which is, if you don't know, a hugely influential literary newspaper.
Your husband loves the London Review of Books.
It is the only thing he reads.
Yeah.
Genuinely.
He's the only person I've ever seen reading it, I have to say.
Well,
he's such an intellectual.
He's an intellectual.
Yeah. Ben would fit into this family really well, wouldn't he?
Well, he'd probably...
As a quietly spoken neighbour.
Yeah, quietly spoken neighbour. He would have liked that. I think, yeah, my husband does love London Reviews. I didn't know what that was, the LRB, until I met Ben. I had no idea what it was. But it has like the highest circulation for any literature magazine, and it's oddly influential. It's where Hilary Mantel wrote that essay about Kate Middleton.
Yeah.
So it publishes things that... often controversial and wouldn't be published anywhere else. Mary Kay Wilmers has basically bankrolled it for many years.
And she's only just stopped, hasn't she, in 2021?
She's still consultant editor, yeah, but she has now stepped down because of her, I don't think she's reached retirement age, but she's still very much involved. And she created it with Jonathan Miller, but then they had a fallout and she took over.
So who is Jonathan Bloody Miller?
Jonathan Miller's just like, a writer, playwright, but was a doctor. I don't want to say too much because I think I'm not entirely 100% of his career, but he's very much of that like John Cleese, used to do comedy, but then end up writing.
Okay.
Very famous English writer.
Did he write operas?
He moved on to operas, yeah.
Yeah.
But he started in like doing like sketch comedy with like Alan Bennett and John Cleese back in like that week.
It's amazing that comedy can just go, you can just become whatever you want.
You've just released a novel.
Exactly. Comedians, they're just stopping us.
He's a very intellectual, funny, interesting person who has written lots of things and then now I think writes opera.
But this book is not about him.
No, it's not about him.
He's barely in it, actually.
He's barely in it. It's Nina's take on this world. So she doesn't know any of these people, to be fair. And the book came about because for Mary Kay Wilmer's 70th birthday, Andrew O'Hagan, who's a novelist and also writes for the LRB, decided to collect all these tributes for her and do them at this big birthday party. And Nina said, my sister found these funny letters. And they read two of the letters out of the party and it went down so well. Someone was like, there's a book in that. Mm. Ah. And Mary Kay Wilmer's originally was like, absolutely no way are you publishing this.
Yeah.
And Sam and Will said, no, you've got to publish it. It's really funny.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Going to be a TV show of these letters.
With Helena Susan Bonham Carter, HSBC.
Sam, the son, was in it as a neighbour.
I didn't know that.
Oh,
yes.
Oh,
that's good.
Yeah, if so you go on his Wikipedia, this is his credit.
Helena Bonham Carter played Mary Kay Wilmers.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing time that it captures. And I feel like...
But I don't think it captures the time.
Okay, interesting. Come on.
Okay. I think it captures, like you say, like idiosyncratic, a little very privileged.
Yes.
Very posh.
Yeah.
There's nothing sad in this book.
What?
I mean, this is the cheerful moments.
I think Nina, I think you definitely get the sense she's taken out any of the sad. I mean, Sam is born with this neurological disorder.
Exactly.
And that is obviously, he's taken to hospital quite a lot. I think she glosses over any sadness. And the letters are definitely... Like, there's a quote on the front, "The True Heir to Sue Townsend" by Kat Moran. And I do think it's very much of the Sue Townsend funny domestic life novel.
I'm interested I think it's really interesting trying to get to know her personality and whether it's truly reflected in these letters.
Yep.
Because you see a lot of shades of her character. And then there's the odd, there's a bit that I highlighted because I thought it was so Leicester it hurt.
Oh yes, this is why I chose this book, because Rachel is from Leicester.
I'm from Leicester and I moved to London.
Yes.
And I also love that she moved from Leicester to London and her first glimpse, I totally agree with you, of London was this ridiculous, like, literati, very fancy, rich environment. And she must have been like, this is what London's like.
Yeah.
And it's so not reflective of normal life, but... I liked this bit. So yes, we mentioned that Sam has various disabilities.
He's born with Riley Day syndrome.
Right, yes. But that is sort of not specified in the letters, is it? Because maybe she doesn't quite know. So she says, "Dear Vic," that's her sister who she writes to, "I don't worry about Sam much, mainly because Mary Kay does the worrying and keeps it to herself. It's no good to people worrying about the same thing unless they want to go on and on about it, and we don't."
Yeah, I know.
And that reminded me so much of like my upbringing and like that this Midlands... I know it's not exclusive to the Midlands, but this Midlands mentality of like, there's no point harping on about things, just kind of get on with life, and life's hard and you've just got to get on with it. And I wonder if that's why there's not too much sadness in there. It's just her personality maybe is just like, yeah, you know, there's bad stuff, but we'll just keep going.
There's that amazing bit as well when she talks about the new nanny who replaces her, who she thinks is too nice and is annoying MK. And she says to her sister, "Oh, you know, I asked MK once how her weekend was and she gave me a look and I realised, well, don't ask that again."
Yeah.
Like, but again, very matter of fact, not offended, not bothered. You know, I think it definitely is talking about an extremely tiny pocket of London in the 80s who are obviously, you know, not particularly affected by what was happening in the government that time or the miners' strikes, but they are obviously there's lots of writing going on about that. And I think that's what I like. To me, it is a comfort read. Mm. It's a very lovely, warm place to be that's very funny and very lovely. And the idea, just sort of sinking in. I love reading letters. I love reading other people's letters. Mm. I feel just don't like the nosiness. I read the entire letter collection of the Mitford sisters.
Did you?
Which is huge.
Yeah.
But just being able to see how people express themselves so freely, and then you get the sense of Vic. There's these amazing moments in the book where she won't reference what Vic has said, but she's like, oh, disagree with you about, yes, P. Yeah. Make sure you get a different car.
Or when she sends her essay and goes, sorry, you didn't like, yeah, my story.
Oh, the, yes, autobiographical essay. Because, yeah, we should say it's almost educating Rita. She moves in with these people. She's dropped out of school. She has no qualifications at all. She's been working at a dentist before. She's a nanny for them. She has absolutely no qualifications to be a nanny either. And then while she starts living with them, they convince her to go back and go to university, and she goes to Thames Polytechnic.
There's a beautiful bit where she says, when she's like got her bag on, she's ready for college, yeah, and she says, I caught a glimpse of myself in the window and I felt, and I think she sort of, because I listened to the audiobook as well,
oh, wow,
she goes, read by her. And she says, I felt thrilled. And she, aww, doesn't, because she's quite kind of, what's the phrase? She's quite even,
yeah,
in,
yeah,
her spirit, yeah, isn't she, all through? And to have these moments of little highs, like you say, there's not loads of like really, really high or really, really low.
Yeah.
To have a little moment of like, yes, yeah, she's thrilled, like, of her like empowering herself. That sounds so patronising, but...
But yeah, I think, and I mean, it is a privileged story, but also she's not from privilege at all.
No.
At all. And if you read her fiction after this, which I've read all three books, kind of autobiographical memoir, but fictionalized. Her childhood was really tough, really, really tough. Leicester working class, like, and so I found that interesting to read them, and then looking back on this and being like, she dropped into an absolutely alien world. But it also, I guess, I'm in defense of privilege. Like, those people are real; they do exist, and it did happen to her. Even though there's other 80s stories that would be more reflective of working class voices.
Rachel, what was it like for you when you moved to London from Leicester?
Not quite the same. I moved in my early 20s to a tower block in Ealing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was...
Was this for to study?
No.
For work?
No, to get a job, to work, yeah. So I'd kind of had my like post-uni years of doing a bit of work and doing a bit of acting and stuff like that. But just, I knew, I'd been meaning to move to London since after uni and just been putting it off. I knew that if I wanted to get into performing, really, I needed to move to London. But I also knew I had no money, so I moved to London. It was, when you think back of what you do in your life, it's absolutely insane. But I had £300 in my bank account.
Woo!
And that was enough for the first month's rent.
Mm-hmm.
I found some old friends to live with who had one place going in Ealing. I knew nothing about any of where Ealing would be in relation to anything else. I didn't yet have a job, so I knew I had 1 month to get a job to pay the next month's rent.
Oh, yeah, my Lord.
And a job that needs to pay you.
A job that needs to pay enough.
Yeah,
So I did. I got, first of all, a hodgepodge of jobs, a little job in... Stevenage, actually, on a weekend doing stagecoach drama teaching.
Oh, right, yeah.
So I had to get up at like 5 a.m.
From Ealing to Stevenage, that is so far.
And got other little bits and bobs. Oh, I did like Perry piano teaching and everything. Yeah. And then I got an unpaid internship initially, but then they did turn it into a junior role at admin assistant. So yeah, I just did what you have to do to live in London, which is get several jobs to pay the rent. And then once I was earning enough, I could start doing a bit of music and comedy on the side. And then, yeah, years went by and then I became a comedian.
When I met you, you were living in a very nice house in Stockwell. And then it was very old.
Old, yeah, it was characterful.
It was characterful with no washing machine. And you lived without washing machine for so many years.
8 years.
I couldn't believe. How can anyone cope?
There's a book in that.
Yeah.
I want to hear the day-to-day of a woman who's got to wash her pants in the sink.
She would not be bothered. And then eventually you were like, even now you're like, well, I sometimes forget about the washing machine.
Does having a washing machine feel like a massive luxury?
Yeah, it's sort of, on the one hand, it does. Having a washing machine and now, a dishwasher.
Okay. Ben didn't want a dishwasher. He was antsy because he didn't grow up with one. He was like, what's the point? And I put my foot down and was like, he's like king of it. He loves it so much, and he loads it correctly and tells me off, and he like looks after it, and it's like his third child. because it is so good.
And he sounds like a brilliant butler with the London Review of Books tucked into his into
why
his
do you think
jacket?
I married him? Yeah, you got it. Yeah.
I still can't quite get into the rhythm of having a washing machine in that I still have the habit.
So what did you do before?
Saved it up until you've got a big pile of washing for probably too long, like a month, and then take it to the laundrette where they have like massive king size.
Yeah, really.
But
good
she
machines.
Also used to be so frugal and be like, "Oh, I've just washed my top because I wanted to wear it in the sink."
Yeah.
So she just washed one thing she needed.
Yeah.
You're lucky you're not sweaty, Rachel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I do get away. Sometimes I don't get away with it, but I do get away with. Yeah, my husband is like, you should do laundry more. Like, I'm quite skeptical about laundry, but the dishwasher, I'm like, I refuse to wash anything up that could conceivably go in a dishwasher.
You put everything.
It drives me mad when he's washing things up. Why are you washing up a knife?
Isn't there a similar thing where you have to wait for it to be pretty much full before you put it on, or would you just put it on for like a meal?
You do sort of have to wait for it to be pretty
full. But with kids, it just is full, and you can put bottles in there.
Yeah.
Like not having to clean the bottles and have them all everywhere, like drying, and then worrying about which ones have got like, oh no, that one's now fallen over and it's now not clean. And
yeah,
oh, I feel like we're on a tangent.
tangent here. It's sort of the minutiae of daily life, and I love that this writer has decided to just highlight things which most of us have in a day with our friends and people we love and don't consider important. Don't go, oh, let's record that. Like, there's one of my favourite bits where she's talking about that Sainsbury's is so cold and that's why women are grumpy, because they have to go into Sainsbury's all the time and do yoga, and she thinks actually if women didn't have to do that, life would be easier.
Yeah, she's or like where women are always putting cardigans on.
Yeah, the cardigan thing. Or like she's got all these sort of mad friends as well, like, and her friend Pippa giving her this long detailed lecture about her spaniel and how he's a King Charles, and like, it's very similar to Alan Bennett's writing, or Victoria Wood is what it reminds me of as well. Of like, it's really domestic. It's really about the phrasings that people use, that in a day we all hear those funny conversations and we don't think much about them. But for someone else to be able to have the skill to be able to grab that conversation and put it down and be like, that's what real life sounds like. That you get such a sense of their house.
That's what became interesting when she started to write autobiographically while she was studying, because it's the first time she ever gets an A, and it might be the only A she ever gets at university. And that's what you're seeing in the letters, is that she was practicing that all along without realising.
We've mentioned before that Sarah and I went to University of Sussex. And there was her boyfriend, well, her sort of on-off boyfriend, who she then later, as we find out, marries Nunny.
In the afterward. They then got married and have children.
Nunny goes to University of Sussex. And that made me laugh out loud. One, that she's describing Sussex. It's full of students, but they seem a different type to the Thames type, more studious and longer hair. And then she said, she wheezes in the sink and feels bad about it. Went for a walk. Strange being with him. Strange being with him there. Strange going away again. Got the feeling it was all over. Brighton seemed pleased with itself again. Just like, yes, it's just how you would, I feel like how we both talk to each other, just, and being able to like distill, I guess, is what I said. But I know what you mean. There's not like a great subtext to it, although I think it's a very poignant book, because it's, for me, it's about, you know, being 20, not being naive, not understanding what's happening, falling into this absolutely amazing situation where you basically fall in love. She's still friends with those boys. She's still, you know, part of that family. And then having to realise that, oh, I have to leave here. Like, to grow, I'm going to have to leave this place.
I was sad we didn't get an ending.
I think it's really poignant. And the second half of the book is called Moving On. And for me, what it smacks of is like, I don't know if you've had this in your life, where something magically happens where you're just like, oh, this is really cool, actually. Like, this is a really good situation. I mean, I can think of two involving both of you, which will make me sound so soppy. But like, I'll go with you, Rachel, because I'm scared to be soppy with Sarah. but like Ostentatious.
Yeah.
Like when we first started it, and it was the six of us, and we were like, oh, I don't really know what this is. And then we started doing those shows, and that first Edinburgh, and we were like, oh my God, this is like really fun. And
people
want to see it, and we're having the time of our lives. And as soon as you become aware of that, you know it will end. Mm-hmm. And it will never be that moment again of like six people at a free fringe venue, just like mucking around, not really knowing what they're doing. And then where we are now, which is like brilliant, but like an original member has left and we have different people, and a lot of our conversations are about producing and admin and who's going to sort out the Edinburgh accommodation.
It's business
and it, yeah. That's what this book reminds me of, that moment where you find something you didn't realize was life-changing.
Oh wow.
And you're like, oh, this is now, these are my family.
Yeah.
And oh, and I have to leave them. Like, that's what I feel this book is about. Yeah.
I wonder if you're projecting that on there.
You do say I project quite a lot.
I didn't get that bit of it.
But when she talks about moving on and having to move out and moving around the corner and then missing them.
Then she moves back.
Yeah, but did you not feel that sense of, I mean, you can say projecting, but that's what books do, right?
Of course,
you can relate to your...
It wasn't saying that you were wrong. It was more saying that's not something I picked up on. The really wonderful thing, the nourishing thing of this book was her finding literature.
Yes.
Her reviews of Hardy and Shakespeare and Virginia Woolf and Chaucer. And all of that was so funny, and it coming right, you know, halfway through from a position of sort of ignorance, being told to read these things by both Mary Kay and Nunny. And then her studying for herself and finding things she genuinely was passionate about, falling in love with poetry.
I know.
And again, she sort of glosses over it a little bit. Mm. But reading in between the lines of that, in terms of like someone who, you know, that's why we love reading. Because it can enrich your life no matter where you're from, no matter how stupid you've been told you are, no matter how much originally it seems like, well, that was written in the olden days. The whole thing about how, oh yeah, they keep going on and on about how rude Chaucer is just because someone does a fart.
Or what does Mary Kay say to her? You don't have to like it, you just have to get it about Chaucer. It's like, yeah, that's it. You just have to understand what they're saying.
And having to decide who to do her dissertation on.
Yes.
And whether it's someone that she, you know, is it, she's choosing between
J.M. Singh and Carson McCullers.
Yes.
Yeah, and she's completely wrong.
Yeah, she's like, I was saying that Carson was like a recluse who
and no one
had
liked
many
her.
Disabilities and no one liked
and
her.
And got bad reviews.
And she says, she's so funny. She says, I've now read a book that may as well have been called Carson was incredibly popular and had a really fun life.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think if you don't think too deeply about what she's talking about, like, it is just domestic letters and it's just delightful to spend time with her, is how I felt.
Yeah, I thought that because I had to sort of get over the fact. So I love a story. My favourite books to read are story. They're like epic or fantasy or murder mystery, like story. And that's so what I'm used to reading. I rarely read factual and I rarely read books like this. And so I had to sort of find a way of accommodating that in my brain. And my way of accommodating it was, instead of thinking of it as a story, thinking of it as like a really beautiful picture on the wall.
Yeah.
With different scenes in, and you can come back to it and you see something new in the painting every time you look at it. And the more you look at it, the more you can find. And actually it is something I could keep coming back to, both the audiobook and the physical book, because there's so many little pictures and scenes within it that are really beautiful that I liked it more once I kind of reconfigured my brain a bit.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because I love reading letters.
I had to really adjust to this book very similarly to you.
That's funny, yeah. I feel like with letters, the reason I love them so much is like eavesdropping. Because you're just like, oh, and then what did Alan Bennett say? And then what happened then? It's like, God, it feels like I got to be here and I got to understand it. But yeah, so I have read letter books before and I do really enjoy them.
One aspect of the picture, if you like, that you could look at is her friendship with Nunny, who we now know she goes on to marry. That she's obviously drawn to and interested in, but there's never a moment in her letters where she's like, oh, I've met this man and I find I find him great, I fancy him or anything. She's quite sceptical of him. And I love the bit where he goes travelling and comes back and just keeps telling her about, he clearly fancies her and keeps telling about all the women that came on to him.
And men who propositioned him.
The men. Yeah. And she says, he seems to have spent his whole time tactfully resisting offers of sex from the population of France and Spain. Which I thought,
it's
quite
so
sceptical of him.
But also a little bit jealous. Because like later on at university, you know, he's mentioning other girls and she doesn't quite know where she stands.
Yeah, they obviously had an on-off kind of thing, didn't they? And she's obviously taken stuff out.
Well, she was doing so much reading to impress him or because of him. Or so they could discuss it.
Although her constant pranks, like, doesn't she take a picture of him on the toilet and put it on the car of his employer?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, and he's really angry.
He's so angry about it. And she's constantly pranking, which obviously is why she gets on with Sam and Will. And I think it's such a funny book. The book, the bit where she gets them lost in a skip, that they decide she gets Sam in the skip and then realises she can't get him out, so then has to get Will in the skip. And then Alan Bennett sees him and lies. She lies to their mum and is like, don't tell your mum, don't say anything about it. Yeah. And Alan Bennett's like, I saw you mucking around with that skip.
Her relationship with the boys is so lovely.
It's so lovely.
Like the fact that, she didn't really have any experience as a nanny, and yet all the experience really that you need is the way she is with them, which is just to treat them the same as her.
Yeah, she's like a big sister, really, isn't she?
Yeah, and she buys into their conversation, she just wholeheartedly, she's very yes and, sorry to be improper about it, she just wholeheartedly buys into what they say and engages with them on their level. And obviously their level, because of growing up where they have, is quite high.
Yeah, God, like Will is writing a novel, isn't he? And he's like 14.
But that's why like the conversations between them are so funny, because it's not like an adult and children, it's like they're all just really believing in each other and taking each other at face value.
Yeah, there's that amazing bit when she bumps the car and she says to Sam, I'm not going to say anything about it to Mary Kay, so you don't mention it, okay? And then Sam busts her and says, Nina crashed the car. And so she's like, no, don't worry about it. It's tiny bump, tiny bump. And she sees that he's hidden his lamb chops under the tablecloth. So she tells him, it's like, oh, Sam's hidden. It's so petty between the two of them, but it is so funny. Sam not allowed any pudding, banana custard, due to hiding the chops. It's so delightful.
There's lots
written.
Of cooking.
There's so much food.
And it's Nina's job to cook. While she does improve, the conversation about recipes and the things that she's made that have disappointed everyone.
I know. And her sister said, saying, oh, we made your chicken. Thanks, Vic. Like, they didn't add tarragon, but they liked it. They have to eat turkey to lower their cholesterol.
Working out ways to cook with the turkey.
Which is obviously disgusting.
And Alan Bennett's always like, you shouldn't have put the peas in it. It should have been on the side.
The great bit when he says that she makes that salad and she uses tinned mandarins.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, it's best to use fresh. And you can hear her being like, what?
Yeah.
Who uses fresh? And I just love that, the naivety and the sort of, I guess I also come from a family who didn't cook and then married someone who could cook, and and having like this famous story when he said, I can make you a pasta sauce, and I laughed and said, who are you, Lloyd Grossman? And he was like, what? And I was like, you can't make pasta sauce. How do you make one? You're like, it comes in a jar. And poor Ben had to be like, no, people can make it. And I was like, what do you mean? And he showed me, well, you fry garlic and you get tomatoes. And that was like, my mind was blown.
It is mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing.
The
but if you've grown up
huge.
Middle class with food access like that. And I guess, I love that Nina comes obviously from that world of cooking pies that are frozen and having to have Alan Bennett, of all people, criticise your cooking.
It's like a really long-running joke with me and my uni friends that the first week of uni, so I went to Oxford, so it was quite a culture shock. And there were lots of people like me at Oxford. It wasn't all, Eton.
Mary Kay Wilmers.
Yeah. But my good friend was like, within week one, we were talking about food and she said the line, oh my God, you've never had a fresh mango. And now I say it even posher than she. I'm like, you've never had a fresh mango. Oh my God, which isn't how she talks. But it was we really laughed about it because it was like, oh my God, you didn't know what you sounded like to me. But I hadn't.
But never
had mango.
But nor would I, or avocado before university.
No, or hummus.
Yeah.
I'd never had hummus.
I probably might have had hummus.
I had hummus after you.
As a vegetarian, it would have been a staple.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely things that I hadn't had and wasn't aware of, yeah, definitely, like how to cook. I didn't know how to cook at all.
My pasta sauce speciality was Philadelphia with Marmite. So I knew you could make pasta sauce.
Pesto and mayonnaise for me.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Simple.
Yes, oh, tuna mayo one. Sweet corn, guys.
Yeah.
What classic. There's no cookie involved. Yeah.
The pesto was the gourmet ingredient.
Yeah,
in that was that.
That's another university discovery.
Yeah,
pesto. Big times.
Yeah.
I found another thing, Alan Bennett talking about going to uni with Mary Kay. I think they went to Oxford. And he said, outside of the novels of Nancy Mitford or Evelyn Waugh, I had never come across anyone who behaved so confidently or in such a cosmopolitan fashion. For the week of her finals, she moved into the Randolph Hotel, staying with her father, whose presence was required due to her threat not to sit the exams. Like, she, obviously, Mary Kay comes from a completely not even upper class. Like, it's a whole other world of international educating. Her mother is Russian Jewish. Her father was living in Brussels. So, yeah, it made me laugh that even Alan Bennett was like, bloody hell.
But that's interesting that Nina is having this experience. I've got my stepkids going through it at the moment, that reaching the age of about 20-ish, which is supposedly you're an adult.
Yeah.
You're about to move away from home. You're living your own life, you're meant to be independent, and yet you're so young and you know nothing about the world, and you sort of think you should, but you really don't.
Yeah.
And yet you're expected to start doing things on your own. And that Nina, this coincided at the age of 20 with suddenly living with these people who were so confident and had so much opportunity and wealth and interesting language and interesting conversations.
And intellect, surrounded by intellect.
And intellect and wearing that intellect on their sleeve, which I think is the literati kind of wealth confidence thing, which is, you know, I really get that. There's a thing of like there's intellect and there's interesting ideas and there's the confidence to really openly talk about it with neighbours and with family and everything. And the fact that her introduction to adulthood was like, and why was she so calm about it? But then, so I read, I just finished it. I kind of read the bulk of it and then had a gap, and I just finished the book on the way here. And this blew my mind. It seems like just a little bit towards the end. She talks about Nonny smoking dope. And she said she tries a toke of it. And she says, I felt relaxed for the first time in my entire life. And
I thought that line was interesting.
You seem so relaxed.
Yeah. Like she doesn't wear shoes and she's looking after these two kids that she's got no experience.
Yeah.
But obviously she isn't relaxed. I say, if you do like this book and you find her writing funny, there's four novels. There's that are about her life in Leicester.
Yeah.
And I found them like almost DVD extras. Like once I discovered the first one is about growing up with her sister and brother and mum in very rural Leicestershire. And their dad left them and her mum was divorced. And basically they had to move to this tiny village. And they were not just bullied, like ostracized, like because her mum was a divorcee. And like people wouldn't serve them food in the shop, like they wouldn't let their children walk home with them, like they had this really, really tough, really tough life because the dad remarried and had other kids and lived in a big, they had had an early life at quite a nice house and nice life, and it all disappeared. The mum had nothing, and the mum had this series of boyfriends who either like ripped her off or stole money from her, and this is fictionalized, but obviously it's coming from somewhere, is often drunk and writing plays and constantly saying she's gonna, like, making them perform the plays. And there's a bit in this book where she talks about the horses. Oh, she writes about the horses coming down the stairs and it all seemed very sad. And that is in the fiction book where they bring a horse, because they are literally, it's not posh horses, it's countryside horses. So they bring the horses in and they get stuck upstairs, and it's sort of written as a funny story, but you can also see it's basically because they're left alone and they're like 12 and 10 and they have to do a lot of things because their mum is working and not around. And it made me realise of like, yeah, she had been not left alone, but had a very independent lifestyle as a child, I guess, because of the situation her mum was in. And it was really, really awful. And then the second book is about working in a nursing home, which is clearly her sister's story. And the third book is absolutely brilliant. That's Reasons to be Cheerful. And it's about working at a dentist. And she did work at a dentist for, like, which is why she constantly comments on, like, when they see Samuel Beckett and she notices there's something wrong with his jaw. She said a second case occlusion. So yeah, she had had quite a life, and I think she'd basically been working from about 15, 16.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's so different to what, I guess, our generation of like 20, you've left school and left.
You've done loads already.
At 20, I think they basically, she got kicked out 15, 16, mm-hmm. or maybe not kicked out, left school to work. But I would definitely recommend the fiction writing because it is so funny.
Okay, so I'm going to ask a controversial question.
Go for it.
Because I think Nina herself, and especially when you talk about the other novels, obviously a really fascinating person and an outsider.
Yes.
And that's what's interesting about her being the author of these letters. The people in it, I think, are ultra conventional. I think they have the kind of quirkiness that comes under sort of middle class, upper middle class behaviour.
Like when people say the Queen has a sense of humour.
Yes, exactly like that.
I think it's a bit harsh to sweep them all under there. Because Alan Bennett, obviously, is not, from a very different life to Mary Kay Wilmers. Mm-hmm. And Mary Kay Wilmers, even though comes from this extreme wealth, the way she's lived her life is very, not avant-garde, but definitely bohemian. And I guess also she doesn't come across as like mumsy. She's not like, oh, I'm a busy mum like this. She the way she speaks to Nina is so blunt and equally very on a level, like treats her as an equal, isn't patronising to her, is like, okay, we'll read that, don't read that. Like, yeah.
There's some funny stuff about the housework, the fact that Nina's the nanny, supposed to be doing the housework.
And she hires a separate cleaner because Nina's so shit at it and doesn't say anything to Nina.
Well, she at one point, Nina says something about the Hoover and she went, I'm surprised you knew what it was.
I just think she comes across as very funny.
I think the boys are unique.
Yeah.
I think they're my favourite conversations in the book are her recounting what the boys say with her and to each other and to their mum.
And their logic of the world.
Their logic of the world, yeah, I think is, it's not just that of children, but it's also not, it's not just that of wealthy young boys. Mm. I think it is genuinely very funny and unique. And I think that even if you condense the book into just conversations between a nanny and her wards, that would be a really funny set of conversations. Yeah.
What about the absence of the father? Because he's not mentioned at all.
Yeah, Sam calls him the phone number, doesn't he? Like, Sam always said, like, 31819 is coming round on Saturday because that's how he answers the phone.
It's a story in itself, the fact that he's not mentioned at all.
That's what I think. Yeah, the omission.
You definitely get the feeling there's not a dad in that house, do you? Like, and Alan Bennett is sort of like...
weird grandfather.
Weird uncle, yeah.
Even though he's not that old, he still feels like a grandfather.
Yeah, he must be the same age as Mary Kay. Yeah, I don't think that relationship is explored at all.
No.
It's definitely Nina's very specific, like she's showing you exactly what she wants to show you and no more and no less.
Mm.
And either you kind of like the world and you're so charmed by it that you're happy to stay there, or...
I guess what I feel about letters is that they are lies.
Interesting.
And something we know about Nina, even in the letters, is that she's a liar. She sometimes steals a towel.
She lies all the time. She's like they say to her, we can't trust anything you say, which I think is...
So she fibs.
An interesting thing,
So I think there's an extension of that where... You're reading these letters, and even to her sister, she's already fictionalising a narrative.
Yeah, she's trying to make it entertaining for her sister.
Yeah. And also maybe for herself, like, there must have been moments of being skint, living among wealth, having to cook them turkey burgers and turkey stir fries, also expected to do the cleaning. There are still ups and downs. Like, she still would have been depressed sometimes.
Mm. It's definitely a rose-tinted view of being 20 and living in London. Like, there's no, like, oh, that was really shit, actually. Like, you never really get... Yeah, you don't get a sense of sadness, I suppose. I felt poignancy, but not sadness. Mm. But I think that's why I like it, because I really feel like it's comfort.
Yeah. It would be so different, wouldn't it, what you were saying about letters and lies, like, to see this exact story in these years, but it was her diaries... instead of letters. So then it wasn't what she was trying to present to her sister, but what she really felt and wanted to note down for herself. And whether we would see more of the low points, like her not doing well in her A-levels and the deaths that we know very little about, and the sort of more real feelings would be less of a comfort read, but it would be really interesting to see what she really felt about some of those things.
She's a Sagittarius.
Did you just look it up?
I just looked. She's a Sagittarius.
What does that mean?
Well, they definitely have a lot of fantasy and a lot of dreaming and a lot of living in their imagination, and things are always going to be better far away over here.
One of the things that I really loved, like my high points, were when her life, her Leicester life, meets the fame of
London. Oh, God, that's so, good.
So the grandmother going to see Michael Frayne play.
And she wants them to meet Michael Frayne.
She can introduce them to Michael Frayne, who wrote Noises Off. That's the play that you're seeing. And they're like, why would we want to meet him? Alan Bennett's two doors down. Can you get Alan Bennett back?
I loved it.
And then Alan Bennett being charming.
And her fury that Alan Bennett is funny and nice to them. She's like, oh.
And then going, can we meet Jonathan Miller? And her going, no, he's moved away. And her going to Derby, which was so funny. And she has to follow through on it and go, he wanted some peace.
And then she sees Rick Mayall and Adrian Edmondson in an off licence.
And there's another bit where she says about Alan Bennett, like, oh, I don't know what everyone's going on about him. Like, his new play's all right. We watched 40 Towers, me and Sam thought it was much better. I just love that. You also see Alan Bennett's fame rising. At the beginning of the letters, he's well known in that circle. Mm. And then by the end, she said, oh, funny to think of Alan Bennett in New York. Wonder what he does there. And if you've ever seen Lady in the Van or The Van, so that is the house two doors down where that woman moves into Alan Bennett's house on the front garden and camps there and he lets her stay there. So it's happening on the same street. A lot of stuff happening at 55 Gloucester Crescent, I think it is, in Camden. And she said as well, she wished she'd made Alan funnier, but to her, he was just a boring middle-class man.
He's quite critical of her.
They don't really get on at the beginning, which I quite like.
It's like they're both sort of interlopers into the three, the mum and the sons.
Yes.
And so they're sort of jostling for a position, and he quite often is...
It's rude. He's definitely rude.
Yeah, he's rude about things that she's cooked or what she needs to improve.
This is when he says, yesterday I cooked a stew, 4 hours, oven lowest. AB came for supper. AB, very nice, but you don't really want tinned tomatoes in a beef stew. It's a hunter's stew. Well, you don't want tinned tomatoes in it, whoever it is. I ruined that. He's very critical. I think you get the sense that they learn to love each other, but they're definitely bristling at the beginning. Because she said she didn't know who the hell he was. So she was like, why is this like... weird old man who's not old telling me how to cook things when it's my job. Which I guess in high you do have to have a sense of who Alan Bennett is, I think, to really enjoy this book. And if you do know more of the characters,
I think the more familiar you are with Alan Bennett, the more enjoyable it would be him popping in as a character. It took me a while to realize it was Alan Bennett because it was just AB.
It does say at the beginning the list of all the people and what they're
a list.
Yes, there's a list at the beginning.
You read lists before you read books.
I read letters and lists. Look, who's who? And it tells you
who I'm seeing this for the first time.
Oh, my God. And
some
it says
characters.
AB.
Michael Frayne was going out with Claire Tomlin.
Yes, that's mentioned.
No, he was in it and I knew Claire Tomlin was in it. I didn't know they were together.
I think they say that.
Who's Claire Tomlin again?
Oh, she wrote an amazing Austen autobiography.
Yes, playwright and novelist.
Biography, obviously. Oh. And at the time of this, she was editing another newspaper. The Times, the Tory Supplement?
Literary editor of the New Statesman and the Sunday Times.
Oh, crikey.
Biographer and journalist. Yeah. Jonathan Miller, theatre and opera director, actor. There you go. That's what she says. AB, Alan Bennett. I mean, sometimes you do have to read.
So I read about 50 pages and I was like, it's so weird because this AB talks a bit like Alan Bennett.
It was Alan Bennett.
And then that's what I've discovered. It's always, oh, I see. So she's put AB, she's protecting him. It's giving him his anonymity. But it is actually Alan Bennett. Okay.
There you go. Another thing that I thought was worthy, that MK used to work at Faber. That's where she started.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she went as a secretary when she was very young. She was employed at first as a secretary. On one occasion, she thought she might be sacked for saying bugger in front of T.S. Eliot, whose letters she used to type.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, she's literary royalty.
That's so good. And I've met Michael Frayne at one of the Faber summer parties.
Oh, I mean, comes full circle.
Yeah, there we go.
MK might have
Would
been
you
there.
Like to read my letters? They're more texts. They're more WhatsApp messages.
Well, this is it. How do we feel about the future of... letter books, like the Mitford books exist, the Mitford letter books, which again I love, if you love letters, is incredible because they kept all their letters, but there's not going to be letters of note. Will eventually run out of letters.
I think they're going to come back.
I've got a box of letters.
Yeah,
but they're rubbish.
Are you jealous of Nina's letters?
I think you do have to put the effort in, like they would have done in the old days, like they're always doing in Austen.
Yeah
you know, at your desk.
Yeah, because it's your only way to communicate.
Hours, yeah.
And she says
or
at the
second
beginning,
draft, so people would edit the letter. You'd write a draft and then you'd do another one to make it even better and your handwriting neater.
In the introduction in 2023, I think this one is, that Nina wrote, 2013, sorry, she says, if I'd had email, these wouldn't exist. Like, it's just because I wanted to talk to my sister about what was going on. And I used to talk to her every night when we lived in Leicester.
Yeah.
And so that's the only reason this exists.
Well, here's some hot gossip. Stephen Frears is one of the quotes in the front of the book.
Yeah. Oh.
He put it in Books of the Year.
Oh, well.
And said, very sharp and funny.
Wow. So he did like it. There we go. Yeah. We'll just choose a last line. This is a good one. It's about Stella and her red tips. This made me think of you, Sarah Pascoe, because you have said this to me. So she's talking about her friend Stella, and there's a girl called Fiona at uni who's got red tips on her hair, and they're all a bit jealous.
Oh, it's about shy people. Yeah.
And she says...
I applauded this.
You have said this to me. There's something annoying about that kind of shy person. I mean, why should they get away with it when the rest of us have to speak? If you're shy, fine, but you shouldn't be allowed to have red tips in your hair. I mean, you're either shy or you're not. And Pascoe has said to me...
Shyness is rudeness.
Yeah, it's not acceptable.
I agree.
Yeah. And I thought, that's why she reminded me of you a bit.
We all find it hard.
Oh, we're all struggling.
I feel like there's a minority of people who find communicating in conversation really easy and enjoyable.
Sure.
And then I think there's more people who are normal and struggle with it and find
and
it difficult and
a chore. Themselves on behalf of other people.
To make people feel comfortable.
Yes. So, and shy people don't bother. They let you stand there floundering, feeling uncomfortable.
I think some people are genuinely shy.
You're always sticking up for shy people, aren't you, Carrie?
Shyness is nice. Shyness
without
will
the
stop
shy
you.
People, who would be the audience?
Yeah, I mean, I find it really hard socially, so I always feel sorry for them because I think, God, I find it hard, and I'm babbling and making the best of it. You can't even do that.
But maybe they only find it as hard as you, but you're trying harder.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Oh yeah, okay.
I think they're not finding it harder, they're just not bothering.
And on that hot political note.
I don't expect they'll be complaining. They'll be too busy hiding behind their fans.
We're really slamming the shy.
Yeah, I'm not scared of them, that's why.
I am.
Yeah, you've got to watch the shy
ones, haven't
you? I
don't mean any of this. I'm sorry for you and I hope you're okay. You don't have to talk. Please don't hurt me. It's the shy ones you have to look out for.
Yeah, it's always the quiet ones, isn't it?
Quiet and shy are different.
Yeah. Oh, you don't mind quiet?
Yeah.
I've got no problem with quiet.
Oh, just shy.
Shh. Simmer down.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you for listening to the Weirdos Book Club.
You can find Rachel on Twitter at Rachel Paris.
Next week's book guest is Living My Best Life, Hun by London Hughes, and we will be joined by London herself.
My novel Weirdo is in the shops, as is Carriad's book. You are not alone. Different sections.
Thank you for reading with us.
We like reading with you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one is coming. This one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.